Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. And now, on to the show.
And now, what everybody is waiting for, I'm super excited to introduce Carl Groves. Carl is, well, I put CEO of Tenon, but now that Tenon has joined the team on Level Access, I'm sure he'll tell you in a little bit what his new title is, and he works at Level Access. He has nearly two decades of experience in IT consulting and accessibility. He also is the person behind the Facts About Accessibility Overlay website. It's overlayfactsheet.com, I believe, and has done a lot of work on researching accessibility overlays, what they actually can deliver and cannot deliver on. And I know that's a question that we get asked a lot, so it's something that we are really excited to have Carl here to present on. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen, and I will unspotlight myself and let Carl take over. Thanks, Carl.
All right. Thank you. All right. I will share my screen now. And so the website that that Amber was just mentioning is overlayfactsheet.com. I'll be mentioning this again throughout the presentation. It's a community-driven statement around the facts, capabilities, and possible lack thereof for overlays. So it does provide a clear understanding of what the what overlays can and cannot do. There's a particularly important section, in my opinion, here that is to be paid significant attention to, which is this section called "In Their Own Words." It does contain actual quotes from actual people with disabilities who have made their own stand against accessibility overlays and their false claims. So if you want to read an unbiased direct quotes from the people, well, actually, they probably are biased because they don't like them. But if you want to read what actual people with disabilities have to say about them, that section of the overlay fact sheet, I think, is particularly powerful. Another resource that I'd like to share is the overlayfalseclaims.com. This is a white paper that was authored by myself as well as Michael Beck, who spoke up a little bit ago. Michael Beck and I did research on the false marketing claims created by accessibility overlays. I also want to give a shout out to Eric Bailey, who did the design, the visual design on both of those sites. And he donated that visual design for this purpose. He also is one of the people who run the accessibility project, A11Y project. So big shout out to Eric, because I am not a graphic designer. I am absolutely horrible at it. And so he fixed this up for us. But let's talk about overlays and in a little bit more detail, and especially about their capabilities. Before I do that, I do want to say that I want to give you a warning, and that is that this talk is going to be super negative. I know a lot of times when you attend a talk, especially if it's at a conference or at a meetup like this, you want to walk away with the some information and some sort of inspiration about how to make your job better, make your work better, do things better, things like that. And so I'm not going to do that. Unfortunately, as a matter of fact, if I'm successful after this talk, you're going to be very angry about what's going on here. And so we'll talk more about that. I do. This talk is going to be pretty fast paced. And I'm doing that on purpose so that there's time for questions in case anybody has questions. But one of the things I also want you to walk away with is that overlays are not better than nothing. That's something that you hear a lot of people talk about. They say that it's better than nothing. It's at least we're improving something temporarily. And what we found actually, we're actually going to be publishing additional research on this. Myself, Michael Beck, and John Watts have done a lot of work specifically itemizing the every single capability that overlay products offer and the effectiveness that or lack of effectiveness really on that. And so this presentation is actually a preview of that research. But we do have to admit that we have a problem. And this is actually the web, the World Wide Web as a whole has a problem. And that is an accessibility problem. Overall, the web is a hideous mess when it comes to accessibility. Thankfully, governments throughout the world have recognized the importance of accessibility on the web and equitable access to the digital world for people with disabilities. So every major economic region in the world has laws mandating web accessibility. And in the United States, we have the ADA. In the EU, there's the European Accessibility Act. There's AODA in Canada. There's ACA. There's DDA. There's everybody has laws around these sorts of things, and that's really, really good. In the United States, we tend to enforce our laws via we tend to enforce our accessibility laws with lawsuits. Whereas in Europe and places like that, a lot of their law enforcement is based upon monitoring and issuing fines and things like that. For the United States, we sort of tend to have these sorts of laws enforced through litigation. In the Obama administration, there was Project Civic Access, which was very active in ensuring that state and local government websites were accessible. But in the private sector, it's almost entirely private citizen-driven websites. And so this has made for a really incredible market opportunity, okay? As you can imagine, if companies get sued for accessibility, and lots of companies get sued for accessibility, and these companies have to comply with this stuff. People aren't complying. That's why they're getting sued. The penalties are pretty painful. Then providing solutions to this problem is a good market opportunity. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the history of all the biggest accessibility companies in the United States, you'll see that a lot of them began their time in the late 90s, 99, 98, that sort of time period. Want to know why? Section 508 came out. So it's not a bad thing to recognize this as a market opportunity. That's how things go. The thing about that is if you can do it very quickly and cheaply, or at least you can promise that, and minimum disruption to the accessibility to the website's UI, well, then you got yourself magic. The overlay. So this is the thing, is that the overlay companies promise themselves, promise the customer that they have the ability to do this stuff quickly, the ability to fix your website very quickly. There you go. Your problems go away. Your lawsuits are going to disappear. And this is a screenshot directly from the Accessibe website. They're the second most popular overlay company in the world. They claim their magical AI can make your website accessible and compliant in 48 hours. So this for those who are non-visual, the screenshot here is basically of a timeline. Step one, paste our JavaScript installation code on your website. Step two, the widget instantly appears. Step three, the AI starts scanning in up to 48 hours. And step four, your website is accessible and compliant. They also show here the laws that they purport to comply with, laws or standards, WCAG 2.1, ADA Title 3, Section 508, and EN 301 549. Here's another one. Another thing that makes some of these overlay companies hard to keep track of is that they also white label their products. So this is a screenshot from accessus.ai. They are a reseller of Accessibe. And so this the white labeling, by the way, if nobody's familiar with that term, it's the practice of letting someone else sell your software as if it was their own. And so Accessibe is well known to have several white labeled partners in real estate, auto dealerships, and also in other countries, one of which is in Italy. And so this one is from the United States, actually, as a matter of fact, for those of us who are in Maryland. This company is apparently in Towson. I think they're probably it's a drop mailbox somewhere. Anyway, another example, Accessibe from Italy. And of course, they're both just white labeled resellers of Accessibe. And of course, they perpetuate those same lies. Another weird trait that we found in our research for overlay false claims was how much they lie about who their customers are. So this screenshot is from Aliable. This contains a list of their purported customers. And interestingly, when we did our investigation, what we found is over about half of these companies that are listed on this list do not have any overlay on their site at all. Among the other half, two of them are competitors of theirs. One is actually a customer of one of which is actually a customer of a different overlay company. And then there's this other one, which is great, which is Microsoft. And I probably shouldn't have to say this, but I will. Microsoft is absolutely awesome at accessibility. They've been kicking the crap out of every other big software company on the planet for several years now. And I've directly spoken with a C-level executive at Microsoft who says that Aliable is not a vendor there. And the other thing that I think is particularly interesting as a personally, as a business owner or former business owner, is that Tenon was a Microsoft vendor. And our MSA with Microsoft says very specifically that we are not allowed to use their logo to do any advertising without their explicit permission. And I can guarantee you that they don't. But some of the names again here for the for those who are non-visual: Diverse Ability Magazine, My Heritage, Audio Codes, Tiva, so on and so forth. Another thing that you'll see, by the way, is when you see a lot of these logos on overlay vendor websites, is those logos will actually be for a geographically specific company. So for instance, I believe Equal Web had the Coca-Cola logo on their website. It was actually Coca-Cola in Israel. So not that they were lying in that case. It was like, yeah, we're Coca-Cola uses us, which is obviously a massive magazine or massive company, but it was only on that particular website. And only, by the way, because Israel happens to have come out, the courts in Israel have said that overlays are sufficient. Another lie that vendors tell is how that they're more successful than they really are. So for instance, this company, Equal Web, they say that they're on over 100 million web pages. And so this is kind of squishy anyway, right? Because what is a web page? They're kind of sort of conflating web page and website. Is it page? Is it URLs? It's kind of weird. But anyway, what we found is that our research says they're on at most 6,000 websites. So each of those 6,000 websites would have to have an average of about 17,000 distinct pages for this claim to be correct. And of course, that's probably BS. Another lie, this time from a company called Online ADA. They sell a product called Max Access. They say certification is the only solution you'll ever need. The problem is that there is no independently developed, industry accepted certification for accessibility. So whatever this certification is that they're talking about, one thing is for sure, that it's going to be completely worthless. Another one we found in our research called Purple Lens. You probably hardly ever heard of it because they're extremely tiny. But what I love about this is they say for a maximum of $16 per month, you can get 100% level AA compliance. And if you've read any of the information that we've published on this you can definitely see that that's not going to be true. You can't achieve, for instance, compliance with color contrast, which is a level AA thing. So many things that you can't actually do with an overlay. And so this these claims that all of them make about 100% compliance is just bogus. Another one, true abilities. These, like the others, they claim all you need to do is install their snippet. And I like this screenshot in particular because I love the fact that you can really tell from their marketing that these companies don't understand accessibility at all. And the reason why I say that is because we have this person here in the little graphic image in a wheelchair, and that's great. Of course, they're doing representation, but it's a hospital style wheelchair, and you'll see this kind of imagery, this clip art imagery, in use throughout all the overlay companies. As a matter of fact, somebody mentioned the image that you'll see on the Max Access website is a clip art thing. At least that one showed the guy listening to his phone, which is typically how a person who's non-visual will use their phone. They'll listen to it because obviously staring at it doesn't do it good. So as they swipe, but they'll all also have these sort of wacky, medical wheelchairs, which again indicates to me at least that they don't understand how people in wheelchairs actually, you know, what they use, and they're not using a hospital wheelchair. Though, as somebody who spent a good portion of my elementary school years in a wheelchair, I can tell you that those things are hideously uncomfortable. But you'll see them in, like, you know, with sunglasses, like Stevie Wonder, with their cane, you know, the white cane resting against the desk. Like, if you know anybody who's actually blind and not resting their cane at their desk, they're folding it up and stuffing it in a backpack or something like that. You know, because obviously, you know, somebody could walk by and hit the cane. Anyway, so that's another one of my fun things about overlay companies. Next one is this. So the biggest lie told by overlay vendors is that their product will protect you from being sued. So I want you to take note of the timing listed in the top right of this screenshot from LinkedIn. It says 5 months ago. Here's CEO and co-founder of Accessibe, Shir Ickerling. And this is a comment from LinkedIn. He says, one note on your comment, you have never, not once, had encountered a company that got sued because of Accessibe. You've only seen companies that joined Accessibe to be a solution to their already existing legal situation.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizeddigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code ACCESSIBILITYCRAFT to save 10% on any plan.
That's interesting because at the time that was written, this lawsuit, which is called Murphy versus iBobs, had been filed against an Accessibe customer. Now, iBobs makes eyeglasses and frames for eyeglasses, and I was hired to file an expert witness report in that case. And in that case, I found that Accessibe is unable to correct accessibility issues in images and other non-text content, unable to correct accessibility issues in forms, unable to correct accessibility issues in document heading structure, unable to correct accessibility issues in keyboard navigation, and the best part, the Accessibe widget itself introduced net new accessibility issues onto the page. Another thing, by the way, I'll also mention about this particular case is that Accessibe also claims to provide a litigation support package. And during documents filed in court, so again, keeping in mind, everything I'm saying here is public information. If you have access to PACER, you can get access to the filings in this, is that Murphy stated that when they attempted to get Accessibe to participate in their defense, Accessibe did not respond. All right, Carl. Forget it. Okay, you've made your case about the automatic fixing. Okay, so what if they don't automatically fix things? Fine. They also have these nifty tools. So the screenshot on this page is, it's a couple of screenshots from different, it's the same. It's from Make Sense. Now there's some conflation around with what Make Sense is versus what Equal Web is versus what Alliable. I don't want to go into the weirdnesses of how these things relate to one another. But they all sort of have the same kind of helpful tools. Like, for instance, in the background here of the slide, we have the widget from Make Sense. It's got font size increasing, adjustments for visually impaired, adjustments for colorblind, all these sorts of things. Accessibility statement. There's one called typical view, whatever the heck that is. Big white cursor, big black cursor, screen reader navigation, all that sort of stuff. What we're finding in this research that we're finishing up, Michael, John, and I are finishing up, is that for the most part, these tools actually do not work as good as the built-in tools that you already get from your computer when you open the box. So for instance, I believe it's the Make Sense or it's Equal Web, one of the two, only goes up to 150%. So in other words, it's only going to go up 150% font size, which is not sufficient for WCAG 200% font size increase. Most of them, if not all of them, I'd have to check my notes. Most of them, with their font size increases, don't go any higher than 200%. Okay. And so your browser automatically does higher. I believe your browser goes up to something like 1600%. Chrome does at least. And your operating system both offer better capabilities than that. And the same thing goes for almost all of these things. So this is Accessibe. No, is this Accessibe or User Way? Sorry, I don't have my notes on this one. Readable font. I love that one. The readable font. You know, most websites these days use a serif font. This one in particular, I know, and I recognize the UI. I don't recognize which one it is. Readable font changes it to a different sans serif font. text magnifier, you know, these things are all bogus. This is a great one. Screen reader adjustments really didn't tend to have a whole lot of useful stuff. Hiding images, that's great. That'll help you make it less accessible because actually, showing images and the ability to see images is beneficial, depending on the image, of course, for people with cognitive impairments, helping to understand and all that sort of stuff. Keyboard navigation, these keyboard navigation things typically nothing better than what the tab would do. Very odd stuff. Muting sounds is a great one. That's built into the browsers these days, so there you go. The other one, I know that one of them has one that's screen reader navigation, and the screen reader navigation actually does less than what can be done in a typical browser or typical screen reader. So again, just to reiterate, a user who needs those enhancements are going to need the enhancements on every website, okay? So UserWay recently tweeted and then untweeted when I called them out on it, recently tweeted out that they support more voices than the typical, their built-in screen reader supports more voices than the typical screen reader. And so first off, that was wrong. Because that's just not the case. Second off, the support for different voices is not built into user way. It's built into whatever speech synthesizer you have on your computer at the time, which is why if any of you have ever used NVDA, you'll notice that on NVAccess website, you'll be able to download additional voices depending on what your synthesizer is and stuff like that. But again, why would you use a screen reader functionality on a website that has like UserWay on it? How would you get to it? If you need it, how would you get to that site in the first place? So that's the really other bizarre thing. The other thing is you're going to need those enhancements on every single application on your computer, not just the browser. So it's not just websites, not just the, it's really bizarre. This is a screenshot of a Windows ease of access settings. Again, this is built into every computer that is out there these days. This is what it looks like if you're on Windows 10. And you'll see here display changes, cursor and pointer changes, magnifier, color filters, high contrast modes, narrator, which is the built-in screen reader. You go here to where it says make the underneath the word damn it on the screen. It says drag the slider until sample text is easy to read. It goes way bigger than any of these things, any of these products. Not only that, you have magnification. You have a built-in magnifier. You can change in the zoom level way higher than the ones that are ever offered by any of these tools. And not only that, but those crazy kids at Apple do it too. So this is a screenshot of macOS accessibility settings. And again, as you can see, there's, in this case, what is highlighted or what's showing is the mouse and trackpad modifications for, you know, what happens when you click, whether the delays between clicking and all these things. These are all built in to the thing. This is a great one. They have tools for screen readers. This is what I wanted to show. So this is the Make Sense tool showing off their enhancements. And what I've done is I've clicked on screen reader navigation and it says, you know, click the zone to jump. And it's got options for links, headers, lists, and images. Well, that is substandard because you can also do all sorts of other things with VoiceOver and Narrator and JAWS and NVDA. So it says screen reader navigation, and it's doing a redundant list of things that are already built into the screen readers anyway, and also not as many things as the stuff that's built in anyway. So here's the headings list in JAWS and the links list in JAWS. Here's the headings list on the left-hand picture with VoiceOver showing you the headings list. And they also show you the levels of the headings. And in the right-hand side is the headings heading element list from Orca. I'm sorry, not Orca, this is NVDA. But Orca does it also. If you're not familiar with Orca, it's a Linux-based screen reader. Next one here, this is, look, you get the high contrast mode from the MK Sense tool. So this is their high contrast mode. They offer one. If you're on Windows, you get three high contrast themes by default. And of course, infinite ability to modify that as you need to with your own preferences. And also, hey, what do you know? A high contrast mode in Apple as well. Here's our high contrast options for Windows. but wait, you can have a big ass cursor. So this is another option. You can use big white cursor, big black cursor. Oh man, you can do that in Windows and Mac OS too. And actually, if you have Zoom Text, you can do even more cool stuff with your a cursor as well, and Zoom Text can have a big circle around it and all sorts of cool stuff. So I want to tell you why this matters. It's not, I realize I'm being super sarcastic about all this sort of stuff and calling attention to the fact that these tools, first off, don't fix the things that they say they can fix. And by virtue of that, don't cause compliance when they say they can cause compliance. And I've also highlighted the fact that their enhancements are not as good as what's already built into your computer. And so a lot of people might be wondering, like, okay, why is this a big deal? And a matter of fact, you know, I've said this myself, that it's not, it's, it's not a case of just being a crappy product, right? There's crappy products everywhere. We've used them. We use them every day. I use some of them at work where we have applications that I hate at work, like Microsoft Teams. I absolutely despise it. But it's not about being a crappy product. Why this matters, this picture, unfortunately, looks terrible on the big monitor. It looks great on my small monitor. This is from the Capitol crawl. If you're not familiar with the Capitol crawl, and this is a picture of people crawling up the steps of the U.S. Capitol building. The Capitol crawl happened on March 13th, 1990. Over 1,000 people marched from the White House to the U.S. Capitol building and crawled up the Capitol steps to demand that Congress pass the Americans with Disabilities Act, or the ADA. What a lot of people don't realize is that people with disabilities have been slower to get their civil rights than most other minority or populations. So, for instance, the Civil Rights Act came out in 1964. The very first disability-related civil rights law came about in 1973, which is the Rehabilitation Act. It wasn't until 26 years later that we had the ADA. So anyway, again, to show you what's going on in this picture, about 60 of those folks who had done that march cast aside their wheelchairs, crawled up the steps. It was very, very bad optics for the president, George H.W. Bush at the time, and for Congress. And this is, at least in a lot of people's opinion, the thing that made the ADA capable of being passed. And what happens when a company puts an overlay on their website is that they are perpetuating discrimination against people with disabilities. And this is not necessarily, although sometimes, it's not necessarily the fault of the customer of the overlay, okay? It's, yes, they should probably be smarter about it. Yes, they should probably do their due diligence in doing their market research. Yes, they should be more aware of accessibility. I agree with that 100%. But I want to highlight again the false claims website here. And what we've done is itemized all of the things that these overlay companies talk about and claim that they can do. And they claim that they can make your site accessible in as short as 48 hours. And so if you're a customer, if you're a company out there who is concerned about becoming sued for ADA stuff, and then this company comes along and says for a couple hundred dollars a month or a couple hundred dollars a year in some cases, we can solve your ADA woes, they are perpetuating discrimination against people with disabilities. So with that, I'd like to say thank you very much for listening. My name is Carl Groves. You can follow me on Twitter at Carl Groves. My personal website is carlgroves.com. The Tenon website is Tenon.io. You can email me here at carl@tenon.io. Actually, it's better. Carl.groves@levelaccess. Either one will get to me. Does anyone have any questions?
That was great. Thank you so much. I'll give some people a few minutes to put some questions in. I am curious. So this isn't necessarily overlay, right? But I know I've read some of this in what the report you had in the iBobs case, but I'm wondering if you could add some context on tools that do like automatic generation for alternative text. Because I feel like that's something that we've had people, like our clients, ask us. They're like, oh, I've got, 10,000 products or whatever.
Yeah.
Writing that would be really hard for all 50 angles of the product or whatever that might be, right? Do you have any thoughts on those kinds of automated solutions that would be good to share here?
One of the things we found, if you read the expert report I filed for Murphy versus iBobs, is one of the things that they do, one of the things that Accessibility does, and I think a bunch of them probably do now, is they do that automatic image recognition. And what we found in the investigation of the Accessibility product is that it can sometimes get it right, but in most cases it got it wrong. In a lot of cases, it got the image recognition wrong. So there's two things, there's two aspects of AI for image recognition. The one is recognizing what the item is. And then the second part is recognizing why it's there, right? So that's the context. So AI is going to, we are a long way away. We are a very long way away from AI ever understanding why the image is there. But we're still not doing a good job of having AI understand what the thing is. Great example is show an AI a can of peanut butter and show an AI a can of tahini. It's not going to get it right, right? And so the way AI image recognition works is it actually subjects the picture to a model, to the AI. The AI measures its probability of being certain things, and it gives you back what the most likely thing is. And it just sometimes, very often, they get it wrong. If you want to see this in action, use Microsoft Office and open up, put an image in Microsoft Office, and then right-click on it to edit the alt text. You'll see the auto-generated alt text. Sometimes it gets it right, sometimes it doesn't. And if Microsoft can't get it right more often than it does, then you can be sure that Accessibility doesn't. So I'd like to see us get more there. Facebook does an amazing job with a lot of the stuff that I upload, but sometimes it gets it completely wrong. And again, you'll never be able to get the context correct.
Yeah. Let's see. So we do have a couple of questions. Joe Simpson is asking, Carl, could you talk more about your journey in accessibility? Where did your passion come from, and how can we make the biggest impact on change?
Well, I can answer half of that question. So my own personal journey, I started as a web developer myself, and completely selfish reasons are why I got into accessibility. I started becoming a web developer when the .com bubble burst in the early 2000s. And I started trying to get a job as a web developer, and I live in the DC area. And that was when 508 started getting a whole lot of attention. And so what they would do is I would apply for a job, web developer job. They would invariably submit my work to Bobby, which was the, I guess you could say the wave or the axe of the day back then. And it would come back and it would have accessibility problems. And that was preventing me from getting a job. And I was like, F this, I'm going to be the best there is at this thing. But then the other part that drives my passion is that as a developer myself, I can ensure through the quality of my code that there are my code will be better for people, with real people that I can sort of point to at the end of the day as saying I've been able to do a better job and more people will be able to access my work as a part of that. And I really like that idea. I'm into usability and all that sort of ease of use and that sort of stuff. Like conceptually, I wouldn't consider myself an expert in those sorts of things. And they're also very squishy, whereas accessibility to me, at least to my brain, is at least much more concrete. In terms of making a difference, I'm going to give my buddy Billy Gregory a shout out, because Billy Gregory had the best answer to this I've ever heard. Just do it. Just do it yourself. Do it the best that you can, and do it yourself, and demonstrate through your work that it's not significantly harder, that it's not significantly more time consuming. You know, the truth about accessibility is it's not any harder than anything else. So if you've ever had to switch, let's say you made a website in old style jQuery UI, and then you had to go learn React or Angular. You had to learn that stuff. Like, you didn't know Angular, you didn't know React, and then you learned it, and there you go. Same thing goes for accessibility. There's very few times when it's actually more expensive, more time consuming to do accessibility. So do it. Demonstrate that you can do it, and others will follow. The other thing, of course, the way I've seen the biggest impact is doing talks like this. So if you're particularly passionate about accessibility, and maybe you're not an expert, and that's totally fine, because there's tons of non-experts out there, and that's totally fine too. Everybody wants to learn. If you have something that you want to share with people, share it. Internally, you know, you got to get that executive buy-in, but that doesn't mean you can't make incremental changes as well to get other people passionate about it and thinking about it.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I really think that's a great point. Like, it's, things can be incremental, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know about during a lawsuit because I'm not a lawyer, so I can't say like if they suddenly expect overnight accessibility, yeah. but I do feel like there are things that can be done even without getting buy-in, you know, like you enter content, start putting in your alt text, right? Yeah. Take the extra 1 minute that it takes per image on everything new, right? Like as you put it in. And that will make a difference. And maybe there's things developers can do that will make a difference, even if you're not making a huge revamp of something, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The one thing I will say, and this is something you can, for those of you who actually work at an organization that has, that is likely to get sued, right? Like a large retailer, bank, something like that. The one thing that you can try to get people to understand accessibility or start caring about accessibility is that once lawyers are involved, all roads always lead to making your website accessible. There's no circumstance in which once lawyers are involved that the website isn't made accessible. So let's say, for instance, you get sued and you just, you know, you settle immediately. The settlement requirements are going to be you fix your website. Let's say you get sued and you lose the website. You get sued, you lose the lawsuit. What are they going to tell you? They have to make your website accessible. Or here's the other one. Let's say you get sued, or let's say somebody else gets sued and you want to avoid being sued. The best way to avoid being sued is make your website accessible. So once lawyers are involved in any phase of any of this stuff, making the website accessible is the predefined outcome in 100% of the cases. Even if you go to Domino's or Winn-Dixie or any of those big losses, they've had to make their website accessible. So do it now, save money, do it now, save money, time, heartache, headache, that sort of stuff.
So that's kind of a good segue into Beth's question, which is, are there any use cases for an overlay? Like if someone has already been sued, is it helpful to add an overlay to show that something is happening? Let's say not permanently, right? But we put this on today and here's our plan for making it accessible the real way. Do you think there's any case or any instance where having or adding an overlay could help?
On the legal front, I'm going to say no. On the legal front, what has happened, actually, you're starting to see this. What has happened, the most recent one was ADP. They got sued by DRA. And as part of the settlement from there, the DRA said, you will not use an overlay. Same thing goes for a couple of the other lawsuits that I've seen around this, which is the settlements are mandating that they do not use an overlay as an attempt to comply. The other thing that I know is that there are lawsuits now that specifically target overlay customers. Right or wrong, that's not my call. But so these days, it's not even useful as a buffer, right? But now I'll answer the other question: is there a use case for an overlay? And I'm going to say that there are some overlay features that I will say are useful. Those are overlays that are read aloud products that are aimed specifically at users with cognitive impairments for reading the content out loud. That being said, it's still misplaced. So one of the other problems that we talk about in the overlay fact sheet is that these are misplaced in the technology stack. Because they, they're added on top of an individual website. Unnecessary and poorly placed in the technology stack. Because even for that use case that I talked about with users with cognitive impairments, there are already products, very expensive ones like Kurzweil 3000 or very inexpensive ones like browser extensions. As a matter of fact, I use some browser extensions for reading content out loud for myself because I have ADHD. But that's a browser level thing. That's an extension for that. And the reason I added that is because Word already has the read aloud functionality that I use a lot. Acrobat already has the read aloud functionality that I rely on a lot. And then this one for my browser that I use. And I think it's called, what is it? Read aloud. It's literally called read aloud. And that is a text to speech reader to read the content on the page. So yes, that capability, that specific capability is useful. It's still poorly placed in the technology stack.
I'm curious. So as sort of a tangent, then I'll ask someone else's question, but this came up as you were talking about that. How do you, because you talked a lot about, you know, most people who know, right? If someone knows that they need font to be zoomed 200% or whatever, they probably are doing that already at the browser level. So how do you feel about even, so for example, whitehouse.gov, it doesn't use an overlay. However, it was coded specifically to include a large text version and a high contrast mode, which was built into the theme. So they know that it's doing everything it's supposed to, right? Like, do you feel like that's useful for a web developer to build those in? And, you know, I haven't seen any stats and I wish I knew, like, if they're collecting it, like, do people actually use that tool or is it there and it's cool, but no one other than developers who wanted to see how it works clicked on it, you know?
I think you make a good point, right? So first, there's this whole thing about there's this idea that we don't really know how much people use these things. We know based upon what's been said here on Twitter and social media and stuff like that from people, you know, where I talked about this section of in their own words. We know that there's a visceral and negative thing. For people, the negative reaction to overlays for people. But you're talking about font resize and color contrast things. And I would say, first off, that you should just meet the WCAG success criteria. That's the first one. But we don't know how many people actually use those, because that is one thing, you know, in terms of font resizing on a website. People might use that. People might use that to increase the font size because they don't know how to do it otherwise. And I wish we had the data for it.
So you haven't seen anything like research wise done on people using that?
No, I haven't. Yeah. I don't think anybody's gathering that. You could do it. So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it'd be easy if that was your website to track with Google Analytics, right? Like,
exactly.
Click, or like Tag Manager, you could just add a like who clicks this and track it.
Yeah. Yep. And exactly. You track that event and then you're good to go. So it'd be great if somebody with high traffic did that, you know.
Thinking I'm going to go reach out to somebody at 10Up and be like, hey, can you track this on whitehouse.gov for us?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
I do think it's interesting because those tools are helpful for, you know, maybe they aren't people that would think of themselves as disabled, but I think maybe my grandma might go there and be like, oh, this font's a little bit too small for me, but she wouldn't know how to zoom in her browser and she wouldn't use other things. Cause on most websites, maybe it's fine. I don't know. I'm not calling them out to say like their font is too small, but do you know what I'm saying? Like on most websites, it's fine, but this particular website, it's too small, you know? So it's interesting.
And that's very true. You know, when you talk about whether people consider themselves disabled or not, for instance, I have my base font at my operating system level here on my Mac preferences, I have that set to larger. And for me, my visual impairment is just like very small, like farsightedness, you know, it's like not a big deal. And I'm not even wearing my glasses right now because I have this monstrous monitor. My wife is another person who would not consider herself disabled, but she has, when she was growing up, you know, in our generation, her glasses were, you know, this super thick glass, you know, looking like through a Coke bottle. Now modern technology makes those lenses thinner, but that's how bad her eyes were. She was wearing those monstrously thick glasses. She wouldn't consider herself disabled either. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Destiny had a question. Is there a resource with aggregated accessibility compliant information that's widely agreed upon in the community out there for companies that they can use or consult to get started with doing accessibility right? I'm guessing we're going to talk about WCAG right now, but I don't know if there are other ones as well.
You know what? I'm going to tell you the most valuable website that I ever used when I was beginning is WebAIM. WebAIM.org. All the people there are personal friends of mine, but I got started my journey in accessibility and learning what the heck I was talking about, where it came from, two places. Usenet, which most people don't even know what it is anymore. So Usenet news groups, and also WebAIM. The WebAIM, first off, their articles, their resources, all of these things have been, they were immensely, immensely useful for me. And also the community, the discussion list here. And this discussion list goes back all the way into the very earliest days of accessibility, of web accessibility. Absolute legends in our field are archived here. This discussion list is great. It's also one of the few discussion lists you can get on that's not filled with a bunch of nasty a-holes arguing all the time. It's a great list. Another one that I would use for people, it would be the Accessibility Slack. That'd be another great resource that I would recommend. But for anybody first starting out, this is the very first website I'd point them to is WebAIM.
Yeah. Great. And then, of course, web content accessibility guidelines. I feel like just going there and reading those is very helpful. Right?
Yeah. If you really are a big fan of falling to sleep quickly, the WCAG. But actually, so what I will say is the Web Accessibility Initiative also has been doing a great job recently of doing a lot of work to in the EO, the Education and Outreach Working Group, has been doing a great job of providing training materials. So this goes back to the previous question about how to get people excited or, you know, interested in it. The Web Accessibility Initiative, they themselves have a lot of resources for different people. Lots of good resources for education and stuff like that, plainer language than the standard itself. So I would recommend the Web Accessibility Initiative for some of that stuff.
Awesome. Let's see. Gary said his workplace uses an extension called HelperBird. It's helperbird.com. They don't claim to fix compliance, but improve accessibility, reading, writing, studying, productivity. Has anyone used that tool? Is that one you're familiar with, Carl?
I am. That being said, I don't know enough about it to comment. That's right. They have Chrome extensions. So I'm going to go ahead and say it's worth exploring, especially if they don't lie about what they can do.
Yeah, so they're not telling you they protect you from lawsuits and make your things accessible.
Yeah. I mean, that's your basic like litmus test whether somebody's full of crap or not, is if they say that you're going to become WCAG compliant or shielded from lawsuits. That's when you start running away. The first mention of that is when you start running away.
Yeah.
It just can't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you have to start wondering what else are they saying they do that they don't, right?
Alicia, did you say it's they say they're trusted by Microsoft?
Yeah, I think I saw someone say
that. Scroll up to the top.
Oh, that blows.
The banners are there. Keep going.
You know, okay, right. So that does bring me back a little bit. I don't know how you do your research on like who's using what tool. Like, I don't know if you go to BuildWith and you like, you know, pull up who has the accessibility code on their thing. But I was wondering, cause you're like, well, it's obviously not on there, but that's an interesting, like our plugin, we have the VA website logo on our thing. Right. But the VA, the main VA website, is not built with WordPress. So of course they're not using our tool on their main website. but they have an internal IT website, right? So that uses the tool. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. so like, that's an interesting thing. I don't know, you know, like maybe some of those, they do actually use it. It's just not on their public facing customer website. They use it on like an intranet that is, that they're trying to make more accessible for employees. And that's where they put their, not like they should, but I'm, you know, I'm just wondering how you approach some of that.
That's possible. But in general, these things are particularly poor at fixing or doing anything with interactive content, you know, thing like, for instance, you know, like your shopping cart or your intranet, or, you know, you're not going to, I would be very hard pressed to say that I've ever experienced that. Actually, when I say shopping carts, now that I do mention, there are a lot of retailers that have it, but excuse me. That's where they really fall apart. Is that some of that interactive stuff, the more interactive something is, the more likely that they can't do it. To get really geeky, you know, modern web development with things like React.js or Angular or Vue or something like that, component-based stuff, one of the big places where these guys fall down technically is that a component, a web component, will encapsulate all of its behavior, all of its appearance within the code for that thing, including its own state management. So if you have a React component that has all of its stuff encapsulated in it, and that and it its own behaviors mutate its DOM, you know, the internal DOM or you know, focus management, all that sort of stuff, that's where you really see these things as being completely incapable of handling that, because they do not have the privileged access to the component code necessary to figure out what the heck is going on. So at best, you get some static improvements at an initial state, and that's it.
Yeah, can I mean, it would be a little bit like an iframe, right? If there was an iframe.
Yeah, I mean, effectively, you know.
They probably can't fix what's ever in the iframe.
No, not at all. If it's in a separate domain, for sure, separate URL, it's not going to touch any of that stuff, any of the iframe stuff.
Could someone click ahead on Gary's link, because there's something very interesting about this site. They're trusted by Microsoft, and then on another page,
if you click the actual link rather than
they do a comparison of their product against Microsoft's product.
And can you?
They're trusted at the same time. It's in there, Gary.
if you click the link out of the chat, I guess, Carl.
Yeah,
it might.
Is this the one, the immersive reader?
Yeah, it's now they're comparing their product against Microsoft, but they're trusted at the same time. It's a little interesting.
Oh, yeah. They're not doing themselves. Oh, here we go. They're not doing themselves any favor with that stuff.
Yeah, that is kind of funny. Microsoft trusts us, but here's how we're built. Yeah. So there was a question and some comments about Joel Dolson's WP Accessibility plugin. I will say that Joe gave a talk for us in the fall and sort of demoed it and talked about some of the features. And one of the things that he says right off the bat is like, this does not make your website accessible. Like, he has it written on the plugin, right? It might just help improve some accessibility. I don't know if you have any thoughts or ideas to add since someone asked about that.
Yeah, so I've been familiar with that for a long time. Joe and I actually talked about that together at Accessing Higher Ground like many years ago, maybe 2014 or something. And what his extension does, what WP Accessibility does, is it fixes very common theme-related issues and very common issues in blog posts on WordPress sites. So it's useful, especially if you're going to use an out of the box theme that you've just gotten from WordPress.org or somewhere else, because a lot of patterns have emerged over the years with WordPress theme things, like, for instance, duplicating the link text inside of the title attribute, like have title attribute and the link text are the same. And that has really dumb implications for having that link text be read out loud twice in certain screen readers, depending on your verbosity. So that's what that really fixes. if you're doing an out of the box theme that you've made yourself, or start or have a starter theme that you're based on, that's a bare bones type theme, you should not have to use that at all. If you're your common customer or an end user who's not inclined to like write your theme from scratch, then Joe Dolson's plugin is pretty useful in wiping out vast swaths of silly common problems. So that's I would recommend it heartily. It as Amber mentioned, Joe is very transparent about the fact that it doesn't fix everything. And you should probably go ahead and do your own, you know, due diligence to make sure your stuff is accessible and that you don't even need it.
Yeah. I think the other thing about his plugin, and, you know, you sort of touched on this, but because it's for WordPress, it's going to do a better job of fixing a WordPress website, right? Than something that's like, I can fix every website under the planet.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's built by somebody who truly understands WordPress. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But that said, I think too, like, we audited a site that had it on there and they had enabled the function to add a skip link. Well, their theme had skip links because they didn't know, and they didn't know how to hit tab to test. So now they've got two sets of skip links in two different places. Right. So it's like, even using something like that, if you're not sure what you're doing, just, you can't just turn on all the options, right?
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, it does. It is important for people to take ownership of their own accessibility, regardless of how they're handling it. You know, to avoid things like you just said.
Yeah. You know. So Patricia asked, she said, "Sorry for the newbie question. There are no newbie questions. I'm assuming overlays are different from WordPress plugins that say they help improve accessibility. Are those plugins helpful?" I think a lot of those are overlays, but I don't know if you have any.
Yeah, a lot of those are.
About those.
I think I saw Deborah on the chat, and you might even know, Amber, there's one out there that's a plugin. Is it the True Abilities one or something else that says it automatically fixes stuff, and it's bogus. There's also similar ones that are for Shopify sites. They're all overlays. As soon as they start talking about, you know, WCAG compliance and ADA, you can pretty much be assured that they're full of crap.
I actually have, I'll throw a link in the chat, a spreadsheet. It's from last summer. I haven't updated it recently, but it's from a talk I gave at a WordCamp about WordPress accessibility plugins. So some of these numbers are incorrect, right? But these were all of the plugins I could find on WordPress.org that use accessibility or claim to help with accessibility.
I love this.
And I kind of like, there's a whole talk that talks more about, you know, pros and cons and like all that, right?
If
you're interested, like, this is what it is. And I'm sort of grouping them, like, are they an overlay? Are they,
Do
they say they also fix things beyond the overlays? But there is a lot of them that, you know, they're not outside of WordPress, right? They're just a free plugin. Some of them do have paid options as well, and that kind of stuff. But this is everything, at least in, I think that was in July that I put this together.
Yeah. I love this. I'm going to copy it. I love it because you're right. And I've seen some of these in our research as well. Accessibility press, you know, these sorts of things. Fixer plus overlay. These are the one click accessibility I'm familiar with in our research. Equal web, of course.
Sorry, I'm scrolling back through the comments too to see if there's any questions. I apologize, you guys, if I miss anything. I have a hard time talking and following the chat at the same time. that talk, if you are interested in that, for anyone else, that is on WordPress.tv, I'm pretty sure. If Joe Simpson's might hear, he might be able to weigh in, or maybe Alicia knows if they all got put up on there. But it's called like accessibility plugins to use or not use or something like that. That's what it's called.
Okay.
I think if you go to WordPress.tv and you search my name, it might come up.
Awesome.
But let's see. there was some comments about, oh, at any point we could be temporarily disabled. So for example, Chris Coyer broke both wrists in a biking accident and discovered firsthand how inaccessible the web was for people depending on tabbing and couldn't use it anymore. Yeah.
That's really, that's another area where, you know, when you talk about trying to get people internal buy-in to get them to understand that it's first off two things. One is that we will be lucky if we become disabled. In other words, if we should be thankful if we live long enough that we become disabled. But once you reach about 75 years of age, you're about 75% likely to have a disability. So if you're lucky, you'll live long enough and therefore probably be a candidate to have some sort of disability. And the other one too is this concept of the temporary disability. Now, obviously, the truth of the matter is that we shouldn't have to convince people of this sort of thing anyway. But to the extent that we can, you know, use whatever coercive tools we have in our toolkit, it is true that, you know, we're all going to become injured at some point in time. In like Chris Coyer's example of breaking both wrists, you know, there's that. I don't know if anybody's seen. I'm getting, so this arm has a full sleeve tattoo on it that I'm getting lasered off, and I'm going every couple of weeks to get laser treatment. And let me tell you, after that, you do not want to move that arm at all. Those sorts of things are common enough that I'm sure most people can recall times when they had problems using technology due to some sort of temporary situation.
Yeah. I mean, captions are a big one that like almost everybody uses captions these days.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Especially on social media or the web, or sometimes if I don't have my headphones, but I'm laying with my 2-year-old in her bed trying to get her to go to sleep, I'll scroll through, or I'll watch whole shows on Netflix with the captions turned on.
With captions on. Yeah. So, yep. Yeah. I do that at the gym. When I'm on the treadmill, I'll be on the treadmill and I'll have Netflix on my phone and watch movies with the captions on, because I don't know why I'm too lazy to take my headphones with me, but there you go.
Yeah. So I see one more question, and then feel free if anyone else has a kind of a final question, and then we'll wrap up. So Scott asked if anyone has encountered an issue with JAWS encountering alt text errors for open graphed images that are located in the head of the website. So Yoast SEO plugin specifically removed alt text for open graph issues for WCAG compliance, but JAWS visitors are encountering errors on a client site. Do you have any experience with that, Carl? I do not.
I don't, but I do know somewhere, I'll try to tweet it out, there is a open issue tracker that Freedom Scientific maintains on GitHub. So you might even just be able to Google or search on GitHub. Let's see. JAWS.
I mean, I think it would be correct for them to remove the alt text on an open graph image, because the open graph image, well, I don't know if would the social media, like would Facebook need that alt text to display correct alt text in Facebook? I'm not sure, but it's not visible on the page. So you probably don't really want a screen reader user to encounter that image.
Yeah, well, so what I was going to do is try to find like a JAWS thing here, because if they're reading something from the head, that's probably a bug, right? So I guess the mm-hmm. proper source for this, first off, would be to find find out if that's a known bug, and if not, figure out VFO standard support.
Do they have an open GitHub library for JAWS, even though it's a paid product?
Well, I think it's under this Freedom Scientific standard support. Like it's just
It's just their support for them. It's not necessarily.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to find the code for JAWS online.
For JAWS.
I'll try to find it and tweet it out. I'll just ask Steve Faulkner what the proper link is for that.
Can you, I think Bet is asking, could you throw the link for that GitHub repo in, I guess when you find it, since you can't throw it in the chat. So Carl, you're at Carl Groves on Twitter, right? If anyone wants to follow you and find that. Okay. So I think our last question is from Peter. What do you do when you come across a website that uses an overlay since they sincerely think it's a good thing? How do you approach that?
It kind of depends. We've had, as a matter of fact, I've had some of my sales guys come up against that as well, which is, you know, we have a sales guy reaches out to a potential customer and the customer says, hey, thanks, but no thanks. We're using Equal Web or whatever it is. And that's always hard because people, you know, psychologically, people don't want to be told that they screwed up. You know what I mean? So that you don't want to like go and be like, you dumbass, you bought this stupid thing. Cause that's not going to do anything but piss people off. And of course I've used strong language, but even if you say, hey, you're using this overlay and it's doesn't work. If you can come at them with real information from as an end user, for instance, that's a great one. You know what I mean? Like say, look, I want you to know, you think you've done a good thing, but you haven't. And then share with them the overlay false claims, the overlay fact sheet, share with them independent information, especially the overlay fact sheet. The reason why I created that was strictly to answer this question. Strictly to say, you know, how do we tell people that this isn't right? And you say, look, this section in their own words tells you exactly how people with disabilities feel about this product that you've put on there. And then the second one is to say, look, over 600 people throughout the world have signed on to this statement that says what you've put onto your site is not sufficient. Let's see, where are we now? 651, and there's probably some pull requests waiting for me to sing. And also all of these additional reading things. These are all things that you can share with them to say, look, you think you've done this right. You think you've done this thing that's good, and it actually has not fixed your problem. But then there's this other question, and I'd like to leave you guys with this, really, is what do we do instead? I'm sure all of us really do understand that the way to do this right is to do it right. You know what I mean? Like fix the site, you know, fix your actual accessibility problems that are resident in your code, fix your design. If you have color contrast problems or things like that, you know, make it work properly for people with disabilities. And that's where we are unable to really answer really offer a complete and good alternative to an overlay, because overlays are attractive because they say they're going to do it. They're going to do it quick, and that they're going to, you know, be fully compliant. They say 100% compliant. We know it's all bull crap, but this is what we're up against, is this argument that they do it completely. They do it quickly. And they do it cheaply. And
I think that's hard for, you know, it's one thing for those of us that are developers, right? We're building new sites, we can build them right from the beginning. But if we're an average WordPress user, Shopify users, or Squarespace, or whatever that is, right? And they're DIYing it.
Yeah.
They probably never even heard of accessibility, right?
Yeah.
I think that's where it's challenging, because a personal blog and they make no money, or a small business and somebody's starting out, right? And they don't have much. You know, it's one thing to be a giant corporation and another thing to like a small business DIY website person, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for us, that's really where I've sort of recently gotten on the bandwagon, which if anyone's in Post Status, they will have seen a big rant from me about that, but around WordPress, I heard about plugin and theme developers really need to take this at heart, because they have the ability to impact thousands, hundreds of thousands of websites, because the people who use their tools don't even know what this is, right? But yeah, I think that's the hardest thing with the overlay, is the overlay does provide something for those DIYers that make them think they're doing it better.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And I don't know what the alternative is for that, because I'm not going to lie. Like, having someone come in and do a real audit on your website and fix things is, you're probably looking at 10K plus. And some of those people didn't even pay that for their website in the first place, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's the big thing that we ran into. So prior to our acquisition, one of the things that Tenon used to do is if somebody came to us and they were like, look, you know, I'm getting sued and I need an audit. And I would say, well, do you really need an audit? Like, let's talk about what's really going on. Do you really need an audit? Or do you just need your stuff fixed? And so we did a bunch of that for Shopify customers and WordPress customers who, you know, because the prospect here for them was get the audit, which costs a lot of money, and then fix their site, which they probably can't do because they paid somebody to do it, you know. So we were just like, forget it, just get out of the way, we're going to fix it. And we did a bunch of Shopify sites like that. We've done some WordPress stuff like that because yeah, that an audit's going to cost more than a lot of these companies' websites do. You know what I mean? You know, when you paid $5,000 for your website and then it's going to cost you, you know, $200 an hour for an audit, which is what I charge, then there you go. It's going to be prohibitively expensive for small businesses.
Yeah, they might as well just buy a new website.
They might as well just put up a new website.
You know, right?
Yeah.
Like that $10,000 to $20,000 they could put into audit and remediation could have been a brand new website that's maybe more up to date anyway.
Right? More up to date and accessible from the get go.
Yeah. So
assuming that the vendor knows how to do that.
Yes, that is true. Yeah, it's I'm always feel bad when we get brought in on a project at the end and they're all like, this is our new website, tested on staging, and I'm like, oh no. Here's a big audit of everything that your developer has to fix. And it's almost like the whole website needs to be scratched.
Yeah. Yeah. Been there.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. This has been a great presentation. We will have a recording for this up on our website. Again, the fastest way to find all of those is to go to equalizeddigital.com/meetup. It does take us a few days because we have to get the transcript and make sure everything is corrected on the captions as well. So thank you again, Carl. Can you just let everyone know where they can find you?
Yeah, so you can find me, my website, carlgroves.com. My company, levelaccess.com. On social media, everywhere, literally everywhere, it's Carl Groves. So it's at Carl Groves.
That's lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel bad. There's a bodybuilder from England named Carl Groves. And so I smashed him on social media by taking up all the things. And he's actually a pretty popular bodybuilder. And so nobody can get, he can't get Carl.
Maybe you get some extra followers out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, great. So our next meetup, just as a reminder, is Monday, January 17th. It's at 5 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Central Time, which is 10 a.m. Australian if you're on that side of the world, 5:30 in India. And that will be Carrie Fisher talking about accessible typography. So thanks so much, everyone. And thank you for the awesome discussion in the chat as well.
Thank you.
And Happy New Year.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizeddigital.com.